Hello and welcome to Show Me Your Mic, the podcast that aims to talk to other podcasters about podcasting. For episode two, I'm joined by Mike Hurley of 70decibels.com. Hello and welcome to Show Your Mic. No, Show Me Your Mic. I'm still working on the name. Working on pronouncing the name. I'm working on talking today, actually. I'm a little flustered. For episode two of this show, I am joined by Mike Hurley of 70decibels.com. Hello, Mike.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm well. I'm an hour behind or ahead of myself. Time zones. That could probably be a whole show, I think.
Yeah, That is a thing.
Yeah.
A good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's just a thing.
Yeah. So Mike, as for folks who maybe aren't familiar with you, I know you through 70decibels.com, which is your podcast network of shows. I think I became familiar with you through Patrick Roan's show Enough, I think is the still the title, right? Yeah.
Yes, at the moment, yeah.
He's probably working on shortening it. No, I'm just kidding. Shortening the title, so no. But where can folks know about you, find you, that kind of stuff? Or is that sort of your main vehicle online?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything. Like I have MikeHurley.net, but you know, which is just as everybody, you know, tends to just have a website, which is their website, you know, if somebody's looking for you. But I don't really, sporadically post things there. It's more just sort of like if people want to Google my name and they might come across that, and then it's just a link to other stuff that I do. I'm on, you know, social networks and stuff as people tend to be. But my online vehicle, as you quite rightly put it, is definitely 70 decibels. It has been for, network's been running for a year. We're a year old, but I've been podcasting for 3 years now. With various shows, and then we put them together into a network, and we've grown the network over the last 12 months, well, about 14 months now, something like that, maybe a bit more actually. I think October was our 1 year anniversary. So,
and you're coming from, in case people can't tell the differences between our accents, you're coming from across the pond, as it were.
Yep, I'm based in London, in merry old England.
And which, that's where, again, the time zone thing, you'd think I'd be good at this by now, but I'm still, I do a couple other shows with folks, and they're a couple of them are based in Austin, and then we have guests on from all over the States and the world or whatever too. And usually one other guy handles all the scheduling, and I just have to show up and record basically.
Yeah. Scheduling is interesting. Like if you have guests and stuff, especially, you know, it isn't just, oh, there's the America time zone and the England time zone. There's then multiple time zones in America. And I'll give you a little quick tip that I use when I'm scheduling for people. I guess people, aspiring podcasts and other podcasters, probably listen to this show, right?
Yeah, that's sort of the hope, I guess. Well,
that's your target market. Well, what I do is most people, obviously, on Twitter, they have their location information. Mm-hmm. So when I'm scheduling an interview, rather than asking the person, you know, what is your time zone, I just go and look what their location is. And then I plug it into, I have two apps. I have one app on my Mac, which I think is just called Clocks. And it's a menu bar app. I think it's what it's called on my Mac. It's just called Clocks. Yeah. The Mac App Store.
StudioDalton.com is the, looks like. Yeah,
that could be it. And then I have I should have checked this a second ago. I have an app called The World Clock, but there's so many apps called The World Clock on my iPhone. Let's see what it says here. No, don't do that. Oh, this is terrible. I'm going to find it in a second, and I'm going to tell you. I'm going to search the App Store because I know what the logo looks like. Yeah. So yeah, I'll take those, and then I just, you know, chuck that information in, like the city or whatever, and then that helps me. And then I just use those applications to look at what time I'm going to find someone. Yeah, it works pretty well. Mm-hmm. It's the app that I use is called the World Clock, and it's by a developer called Orin Kolev. All in Kolev, O-R-L-I-N-K-O-L-E-V. So you can find that in there.
All right. Yeah, I'll put, as other podcasters know, this is what's kind of funny. It's a bit meta, like talking to, in case you're not aware of how to find show notes on a podcast, to talking to a bunch of podcasters who probably do this all the time, but sskTN.com is the site, and then Show Me Your Mic is the show, and episode 2 is what we're on here. So, yeah, I'm always, it's an interesting idea, I guess. This is, I guess, or episode 2, like I said, and sort of still finding out the voice of the show as you probably, you know, you're, as you start new shows, you kind of just sort of, sometimes you have a very definite idea, and this one, I'm not sure. We'll see if it's really experienced podcasters that want to listen, or people who are new, or everybody in between, I think, is sort of the audience. So that's why I'm kind of open to
change. Like, shows just change. So, you know, I think any of my shows that have been running for a period of time, they undergo changes. They get format changes. You know, some get segment changes, name changes, branding, because a lot of the time, you know, something is not fully formed until you've had the chance to kind of go out and test it, you know. It takes that little while for you to really find your sort of feet with it.
Yeah. So talk to me, I guess, a bit about the idea of, you know, you started, as you mentioned, doing just shows, like, you know, I presume you set up a website, or maybe like individual shows sort of randomly around the web. And then at some point you decided, like a year and a bit ago, to put it all on one homepage, one network, as it were. And sort of talk to me, I guess, about the decision to do that and why, and how that came about.
So I think our most well-known show, I think, at the moment is a show that I do on my own with guests called Command Space, and it's an interview show. But Command Space led a previous life as a show that I did with one of my best friends who lives in London with me. His name is Terry Lucy. He co-founded the network with me, but we did a show together called The Bro Show, and it was my first foray into podcasting, and that was what I started about 3 years ago. From there, sort of started meeting people. We, you know, it was just me and him originally, and we spoke about all sorts of things, movies and TV shows and everything, you know, as well as sort of technology and tech news and stuff. We then started getting guests on the show, and then that became a thing. Like, we would have a guest on every show. And our first guest that we had was Mr. Patrick Roan of Minimal Mac. And then Pat became a friend, and then we started Enough together. And then that show, so The Bro Show lives on its own website. And then Enough sort of lived on Pat's website. Then I started a show with Terry and Dave Kalo, called 11 Minutes, which is another show that has undergone various extreme formats over its lifespan. Mm-hmm. And then we set up a website for that. And then I think it was this is where sort of some of the timeline stuff gets a bit funny, because I then had a show with Joshua Schnell of MacGasm called The App Orchard, which that show didn't really land, I don't think, for anybody like us or the listeners, really. We really tried to make it work. And Josh had a baby, so the scheduling then became interesting. And then when me and Stephen Hackett, we launched a show called Ungeniused together, which again is another show that we have since retired. When that show launched, obviously leading up to that point, but you know, it was when that show launched, I knew that we had enough now that I was involved in, that we should really start a network together. Put all of those shows under that network. And then we started bringing in, basically every show on 70 Decibels I was involved in. I was one of the co-hosts. And then as time went on, we started bringing in new shows and building more and more. And we currently today, I think we have about 10 active shows on the network. Because we... maybe nine or 10 active shows. Mm-hmm. It's easy to forget that number because it changes so often. Mm-hmm. We're plodding along. We've got some big plans for 2013, and that's kind of where we are up to now.
Cool. And that's it's similar. I think there's the podcast network idea is something that's kind of relatively new. I mean, I guess the Leo Laportes of the world have sort of been doing that idea, but the idea that us, quote unquote, regular folks could do something like that. It was sort of, I don't know, for me, it was Dan Benjamin's 5x5 stuff and probably a few other folks in there that kind of inspired me in that direction. But I know I went through similar transitions of like just wanting to do individual shows because it's kind of easier than trying to manage a website with a bunch of different podcasts on it, set up a website and have the show on there. But then similarly with SSKTN, do that idea of, you know, okay, let's just bring it all together. It's easier to brand it. It's easier to market it. It's easier to not have to update 6 different WordPress installs, things like that.
When you mentioned Leo and Dan, and Leo was my original inspiration. I've been listening to him since like 2005. And when I wanted to start doing podcasts, Leo was the guy that, you know, I looked at him as the guy I wanted to be able to be like that guy. Mm-hmm. And then after I started the first show, that was when I came across 5x5, because they haven't been around in the way that they are now for that long, like a couple of years, really. Mm-hmm. Then they started bringing on, you know, the great shows that unfortunately we've lost a few of in the last 12 months. And then since, Dan has become my sort of, I don't know if hero is the word, but he's the guy that I really look up to. Is, you know, I want to create something. I want to be able to make a name for myself in podcasting like Dan has. Mm-hmm. You know, because he knew people, but he kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, and I think people who, again, depending on how familiar you are with Dan and with podcasting in general, you might know all this already, but that, you know, he was a coder for a long time. Actually, Dave, in episode 1 of this show, Dave Rupert, we also referenced Dan as well, and I think partly also because they're both in Austin, Texas. But he's, for a long time, he wasn't doing podcasting. It was just a thing he did, or like a thing he aspired to do, but had his day job.
He enjoyed kind of thing, but he did up stuff. And he was known for things like that, but he didn't come from TV like Leo did, you know?
Yeah. And that's what I think, it's interesting, like, you know, who is it? Merlin or John Gruber, both of them, or maybe together in one of their talks. But, you know, that idea of like the right time and place, you can't replicate Leo Laporte because he was at that transition from old media to new media and happened to be in the right place with the right, and lots of skill and talent and stuff. But also timing is a lot of that. And so Dan is, it's kind of like, to me, it's kind of like he's the, whatever, flag bearer for generation 2 or whatever you want to call it of podcasting.
That is a perfect way to put it. Like, Leo started it, and I really do believe that Mr. Benjamin is picking it up and carrying it on. And because I do think, and I know, I mean, I've been involved in podcasting for a number of years now, so I don't think that it's kind of like a Stockholm syndrome thing, but I really do feel that in the last maybe 6, 8, 12 months, there's been what I've kind of been calling a renaissance of podcasting. Like, there are so many being set up now by different people. It feels like every media outlet feels that they need to have one. And that there are, like, every day I'm finding out about a new network now.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't think that there's a oversaturation of it because, you know, podcasts are inherently in and of themselves, like, things that people can just go out and find on their own. Like, you know, there isn't a limited bandwidth for it. So I think we're in an exciting time to be in this space. I think that the next couple of years could really prove to be quite important.
Yeah, exactly. And there's countless, that's another tangent we went on in episode 1 actually is just some of the folks that, that Dave is aware of that are starting, like, you know, web design companies are having their own little podcast studios now because it's, you know, like Mio Radio, for one, is kind of born of that idea of, hey, we can also, it's a marketing thing for them, but it's also a way to promote and talk about different things that they want to push as an agenda or whatever and just have fun with too, obviously, and make some money, presumably, as well. I don't think Mio's doing it and Dan is necessarily are always, they're not always doing it out of the goodness of their heart. They want to also make a living at this too. And so
same here. Like I expect and want podcasting to be my full-time gig, and we make money. You know, we've had various sponsors, but we've had Squarespace have been on board with us since May. And they've been on board every week since, which is, I mean, it's incredible the support that they give us and actually the podcasting community as a whole. Mm-hmm. And without their help, there'd be a lot of shows that couldn't exist, I think.
Yeah.
It's interesting that they obviously really see it. I mean, I know that they do, but they really see it as a very viable and cost-effective way of advertising.
Yeah. So maybe actually let's, like I said, I'm figuring out format, but let's just jump to that idea of sponsorship and that discussion, I guess, which is always, it's a bit of a, it's not like an awkward conversation, but I understand that, you know, numbers and dollars and stuff it's a little harder to talk about because you don't want to necessarily break confidentiality and it's things change. But at the same time, I know for somebody getting into this realm, there is the folks like the Dan Benjamins, like we talked about, who obviously are making quite good money at it and setting up a business around that idea. And then there's a whole bunch of other folks who are aspiring to maybe make money. And there's folks who are doing it as a hobby. And so maybe for like in your career as a podcaster now, at what point did you sort of, was it setting up the network that's kind of was when, okay, now I have this stable of shows I can go pitch to to a sponsor? Or did you sort of start smaller than that and do the affiliate thing for a bit?
Yeah, it's kind of a long story, which is, you know, cool to tell. But basically, the first sort of advertising that we ever had, and people won't remember this, the first advertising that we ever had was with the Fusion Network. They actually started doing podcast advertising in 2011, I'm inclined to say. And they, before we were on the network and I had the free shows, you know, the original free shows that I mentioned, they advertised on all of those and a bunch of other shows. I believe the B&B podcast was involved in that and a couple of other shows dotted around the sort of podcast sphere. It didn't really take off. It wasn't really a thing that was working for them.
Both like in podcast reads as well as web ads on the page, or
it was, yeah, we did a mix of both, but okay. They were actually, these were traditional podcast advertising.
Right.
And then we also had the little Fusion ad banner, which was specific to whoever was on the, you know, whoever was supporting the show that mm-hmm. week. Right. I don't know this for a fact. And Chris Bowler, who started Fusion and was at Fusion at the time, is a friend. I've never asked him this, but not too long after the podcasting folded, he sold Fusion. So I don't know if, you know, I don't really know what that says. People can make their own thing about it, but it didn't take off. Mm-hmm. I think really looking back at it, the money that they were asking for was too high.
Right.
That was, you know, simply because podcast advertising is so difficult. And I'm sorry, podcasters out there, it is. It's hard. It's hard. There's no money, and it's really hard to find whatever money there is. We've had some sponsorships go really well, some go not so well. There seems to be no rhyme and reason for it. It's also so difficult to work out what to charge someone. Yeah. And we continually struggle with this and have struggled with it for a long time. We are not. I mean, the basically what Squarespace give us at the moment supports all of the costs and gives the bit of profit for the hosts. So I'm currently not actively pursuing other sponsors. Right now, I feel like we have some other work that we need to do before I start going deeper in that route. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so then we went without sponsorships for a long time because I felt like we needed to continue to build our listeners, because obviously that's the biggest thing, right? Listeners. Mm-hmm. So we launched the network, and then there was kind of like a chain of events that led to sort of where we got. And when we launched the network, we were contacted by Apple they wanted to give us some of the tools that they have to create sort of the branded page on the store. Which was very awesome. And then little things like that, I think, build your reputation and then it builds your listenership and things carry on. And we kept growing and growing. Then I started pursuing sort of smaller developers, 1, 2, 3 person shops, and getting some practice in with creating ads and stuff like that and charging relatively small money. And then I had a friend who knew somebody at Squarespace. I got a contact and spoke to little Ryan, and we set the deal, and it's been renewed every month since May. So I'm sure that they must be happy with what we're doing.
Yeah, I would presume so. I mean, obviously they can decide to stop.
They could have at that point. And yeah, they do give us feedback, and you know, we give them timestamps so they can listen to the ads if they want to. I don't think they listen to all of them, but they do check in, and sometimes they'll say, you know, talk about this, stop talking about this. Mm-hmm. But they seem happy. They sent us t-shirts. So. Yeah, I mean, and it's, we have a great relationship with them, as they do with the communities I mentioned. And I think that's one of the things that I love about them. And we use them as well, which does help. Like 70decibels.com is built on Squarespace. Mm-hmm. And I think that really helped. That really helps me with the sponsorships. And I think it showed them that, you know, we were serious about it. But see, the thing is, sponsorships are difficult because nobody talks about numbers. Like, you know, you don't know how many download numbers I get, the same as I don't know how many Dan gets, and we don't, nobody, it's like a sort of gentleman's agreement that nobody speaks about them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are, it says on our advertising page, we are over 100,000 a month. We're significantly higher than that now, but I don't currently feel the need to change it. Because people can contact us if they want to find out our accurate numbers, and we obviously provide these to advertisers. And in the same vein, you know, we used to have the amount of money that we charge per spot, and we've now taken that off. And it's because, you know, it having those numbers front and center kind of devalue what you're trying to do. And I think that if you want to have a sponsorship, they should first and foremost want to work with you. And the money and the numbers kind of come secondary to that. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like, the best sponsorships that we've ever had, the most successful ones, aside from the Squarespace stuff, has been people that have enjoyed what we do, so they know we're the right fit. And products that I personally use or enjoy myself, so I know I can give them the best read. And that's something, like, I have turned down sponsorships in the past. We were offered a pretty decent deal, actually, quite early on with a domain company. Mm-hmm. And I have used this company myself in the past just because they were cheap. But there's, yeah. And we, you know, we were offered this deal, and it all looked really good. And I kind of just at the last minute changed my mind. Didn't want to go through with it. And then there was an animal scandal, so ended up being the right thing to do. And the guy, you know, he sent me another email and was like, "Come on, you know, we could, you know, what can we do to make this happen?" And I was just like, "Right now, I will lose listeners if I work with you, and the money's not worth it." Mm-hmm. Because this is what I consider my future to be. Sorry, you want to say something?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it's too bad you don't have a podcast devoted to killing elephants, but because that would have been perfect synergy. But I think it's that long, what's the marketing term, long tail game, or the long game anyways, as opposed to just the short-term gain of getting a bit of cash. But that, as you and I both know, you can buy some gear and pay for some hosting and some streaming services and whatever, and money disappears pretty quickly, even in a relatively cheap hobby like podcasting. So,
yep, you can put some serious money into it. Like, mm-hmm. I remember when I bought my first USB mic, because we were using these horrible headsets, just because I didn't want to spend loads of money on something. And then mm-hmm. I bought a Yeti, and it was like £100 or something. And I remember at the time thinking, that's a lot of money to spend on this. And I mean, I have the equipment that I use now is worth thousands of dollars. Like, it's funny how these things, they escalate, and it all just becomes relative.
Yeah, exactly. With the you of 2 years ago could look at the equipment you have now. And but before I get to the equipment, which I do want to talk about, because I know that's sort of one of the things I want to touch on with this show. But so the sponsorship is one angle. That you have a donate button on your page on your website. And that's something I know I've wrestled with too. And I guess I would be with SSKTN, I would be probably at maybe a year ago where you were, or whatever, you know, smaller scale maybe, but a year ago time frame or so, where I've had a few shows, and so I've struggled with that idea of sponsorship, and you know, I've done a bit of the affiliate stuff, and I'm still working out. Like, I think I'm where you, like what you said, I need to build before I can actually go and sell stuff to somebody, sell the network to somebody, but or sell sponsorship. Sorry, not selling the network, but selling sponsorship idea to somebody. But I did actually have a conversation with Little Ryan before he was Little Ryan on Merlin's show. Anyways, he's had a podcast or a Skype conversation with him and somebody else from New York one time, and it was just kind of interesting to chat with him. That was right before they changed their whole program, actually. But anyways, I digress. The donate page, how has that worked for you, and what comments do you have on that, and recommendations for folks who are thinking that? And again, I think to preface this with a really long ramble, quick question with a long ramble is, I think people often get into this thinking, I'll stick a donate button up on the page somewhere, and then the money's just going to pour in because people love me. And, you know, even though it's just my mom downloading my podcast, somehow other people are going to donate and I'll make a bunch of cash at this game. And so comments on putting a donate page button thing.
It's an interesting one. I've never had anybody ask me about this before. And it surprises me. I mean, I, not to say I forget about it, but I never think to bring it up. I don't know why that is. So I put the donate page on when I designed the website just because everybody else had one. You know,
yeah.
All the other networks that I was kind of basing my site on, you know, how what sort of things do you need on a podcasting network website? Everybody had one. And then I can't remember how this started, but a couple of my friends and colleagues and stuff on Twitter just started sort of grassrooting, you know, let's support Mike and what he does. Let's support 70 Decibels. Come on, this, you know, and they sort of drummed together a bunch of support for me, and a bunch of people signed up for donations. And then periodically I or one of the other hosts mention it, or people find it. And we have a selection of extremely, incredibly nice, generous people that donate to me monthly or do one-off donations. And their money actually, you know, is enough to pay for all of our hosting. And that really goes a long way, mm-hmm. because the money that I get from the listeners would keep us going if we had no advertisers, and that's really important. And it's an amazing thing. And you know, saying this now, I probably don't do enough to thank them. And we're working on stuff like that now for this year to try and do some more there to thank the people that do it. But you know, it's not. I know this is nothing, but I personally email every single person. You know, mm-hmm. I don't have like a form email. I write them all something separately and. People do it because they know that what I'm doing costs me money and they get it for free. And people value, I guess, the entertainment that they get out of it or whatever it is that for us works for them. You know, yeah. Whatever it is that we do that makes the shows worthwhile for them. And a bunch of very, very generous people want to support that. And it's awesome that they do. And it really helps out. So it's one of those things I would suggest put the button there, but don't talk about it every week, because mm-hmm. you know, it kind of, you're kind of just sitting there with a hat in your hand. I don't know. It's maybe because I'm a British person, I can be very funny with some of these money things, but my advice is definitely have one, because there are people that will want to pay for the work that you do and the entertainment and enjoyment that they get out of it, but don't expect it to bring you in. Like Leo Laporte, his salary is the donations.
Yeah.
It's his personal salary for Twit. He doesn't take any money from the business. It comes, everything, his salary is just the donation money. And I remember when he did that, and I mean, that's pretty sweet. I mean, that's a lot of donation money.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Presumably. Yeah, it's an interesting idea, I guess, and just a way of, I think what I guess I see with you and observing from afar, both geographically and then whatever through Twitter and things, is there's a certain sort of group of folks online that are also doing things online, and I'm just sort of thinking this through as I speak, which is, I guess, the nature of podcasting. But, you know, the folks like Sean Blanc or Patrick Rowan and his sites, they all understand the idea of giving stuff away, but then returning a bit to the folks that you get stuff from, I guess. And so I think the mistake many podcasters make, and I know I've sort of struggled with this in the past, is that trying to build something, you do need to sort of find your community online, and not that it has to be exclusively all quote unquote online people and not real world people, which, yeah, that's a weird discussion in itself, but there is a certain element of, in the quote unquote real world, I give you a physical thing and you give me money in exchange, and that's how you make your living. Whereas online, there's a bit, it's just a different thing, and people are still, I think, sort of grasping at the idea of supporting individuals or smaller shops such as 70 Decibels and or even bigger companies like 5x5 with their actual cash for this thing that is free otherwise. And so, yeah, I think, I guess my commendation to you and whatever kudos to you, I guess, for getting yourself into that position. And it's not by accident, it's not by being anything other than an authentic person to find that community. And then that community helps build you out as well. And it's a bit of that I scratch your back, you scratch mine mentality. Yeah. So,
yeah, we all help each other out. It's one of the best things, one of my favorite things about what I do is that I'm involved in a great community of people, both my friends and colleagues and our listeners as well. I mean, that's easily my favorite thing about doing all of this is that I'm very privileged that I get to talk to people that I admire and respect and get to have fantastic conversations with people that enjoy the work that I do. It's definitely a privilege. That is quite honestly too easy to forget sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame because it just kind of becomes part of your life. And it's very strange when you get to know people that you've respected from afar and have been fans of for many years. And then they become friends or just people that you know. It's just weird how it can become very quickly just a normal part of your life. It's very, very strange. It's very, very interesting.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to remember if it was an interview you did with somebody, or maybe I'm thinking of a whole different podcast, but this, I think the podcasting community in itself, there's this idea of, you know, you listen to someone like a Merlin Mann or a Dan Benjamin or whoever, one of your peers that you look up to, and every week, presumably on their podcasts that you listen to, they're in your ear, like, you know, literally. But then actually to have a conversation like with you, where I'm used to hearing you talking to someone else and not really thinking about talking. And your voice kind of is this thing that's in the background sometimes when I'm working on other stuff. But then to actually have a conversation with you is just kind of it's an interesting, neat little, I don't know if that's breaking down the, in acting, there's the third wall or whatever. But anyways.
I have had this conversation with people. And I think the first person that I heard say something like this was when Dan did a little, you know, what happened with the talk show thing. Do you remember that?
When
the talk show, he did a little PSA. And he kind of just sort of said he understands why people are reacting to it the way that they are, because you kind of feel like you start to know this person because they are a part of your life in that they are in your ears. And that you listen to them for many hours a week in some cases.
Yeah.
And that you start to feel like you know them. And I think people can't, unless you experience that, you can't sort of explain it to someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you try and tell someone, you know, that you feel like you know me, I mean, I understand if somebody says that. Because I feel like I know many of the people that I listen to every week. It's an interesting thing. It's very, very peculiar to outsiders, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Changing gears a bit, I just want to quickly cover, because we haven't even touched on it, and I know that there's some folks who listen who this is all they maybe would tune in for, but so I apologize that 45 minutes in, or 35 minutes in, I guess we're just getting to some of the gear, but... however briefly here, I'm just trying to think the best angle to approach this. I guess computer wise, you're doing typically, sorry, not computer wise, but you're typically doing a 1-to-1 podcast, I think, for most of them, right? And then
they're all 1-to-1.
Yeah. And so you're on a, I know from listening, you're on a Mac of some sort. I can't remember what you're using these days, but what?
So I kind of, the way that I record is I have a Mac Mini in front of me that I use during the shows. Like, that is the machine that I have, that I use to keep up with things, create show notes. I have my outlines and stuff on here. Once upon a time, I actually recorded all of the shows and did all of that on this Mac Mini, MacBook Air 11 inch. I must be some sort of crazy fool, but now I use a Mini. What I'm speaking to you now, I have a Mac Mini that does all, just does the recording, and I post from it too. I post the shows from it.
Interesting. And so that, on that, you're running what, Logic or GarageBand, or what are you using to?
I actually use GarageBand at the moment. I have a copy of Logic. I've opened it, played around with it. It terrifies me. I know that I learn it. I know that, you know, that before I can really use it to full effect, I have to actually understand how the thing works. And I appreciate that this would take time. I have heard that there is Logic 10 on the horizon, you know, Logic X, like in the Final Cut Pro X type thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to wait now and for that to show its head or not, and then work from there, because they totally changed the application and hopefully make it just a smidgen more user-friendly, then I'm going to, you know, I don't want to waste all that time learning Logic in its current form.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's, I know I look at, I happen to use Logic Express just before they released Logic. I think I'm on Logic Express 7 and 8 is in the Mac App Store. Anyways, whichever one was right before they put it in the Mac App Store, that's the one I bought. And yeah, it's overkill. Like, there's, I know, I think I remember listening to an episode of Enough, maybe, where you were talking about the gear that you do and that you did at that time anyways, used GarageBand and still do, obviously, and occasionally use just plain QuickTime, which I know you're using QuickTime right now just to record on your side, just in case Logic decides to go awry on me here. But yeah, there's way more in here than you would need. I mean, it's interesting, I guess, to think about, you know, using this software that's designed for producing audio for CDs and, or what's a CD for music. And then we're mixing it down to, you know, 96 kilobit or 64 or whatever, sometimes mono, you know, taking everything out of it. And it's like a bit of overkill for a lot of people do. And I think it's a good testament, I guess, to what GarageBand is capable of for coming with every Mac, that, hey, just use that and you can get going. So what other gear do you use as far as, before we get into the mic question, I guess that's the big one that people often ask, but any other gear that you use for, like, mixers, anything like that?
Yeah, I have a Mackie Onyx 1620 mixer, which is far more than I need, like, so much more. But I've future, so I have a 16 channel mixer, of which I'm currently using 2 channels.
Hey, me too. That's the one I'm looking at here too.
So I bought it to future proof. I one day expect to use multiple Macs with multiple Skype lines in. So with our first sponsorship check, the other hosts kindly donated their proceeds to me so I could upgrade the equipment that I have here. Of which I bought the mixer, the Mac Mini, and my microphone, which we'll get to in a moment. But so I have this; it's a FireWire mixer, so it will, you know, I'll be able to get the multi-channel into Logic whenever I want to get around to using that. But at the moment, I just have my mic going in there, a line out from the Mac, and then a line back in from the mixer.
Right. Yeah. That's the same.
And I don't understand. I have no idea how any of it works, and it took me multiple hours of almost tears trying to just get these two to work.
Well, that's good. I feel somewhat a kinship, I guess, then with you, because that was me too. I sent numerous Twitter questions and whatever to, I think, Dan and then some other folks, because I'd heard about this mixer. And like you, I bought it because I wanted to future-proof myself. I thought, if I grow, I want to be able to grow and not have to upgrade that kind of gear in a year or whatever. The because the fear I have these days, I don't know if you've felt this a bit, is, you know, as the software and things improve, like the biggest hurdle, I think the reason why you and I and others like us, and then why Dan, like, I know this is basically the mixer I think he uses, or maybe he used to use and has upgraded, but with 5x5, but we use this so you can have multiple people on different channels recorded, and then we can adjust. So if you go off on a rant and start screaming, and then my other guest isn't screaming or whatever, we can record all those tracks separately, right? That's sort of and the audio quality is improved as a result of all that too. My fear is that the software is going to get so much better on, like, say somebody comes out with something like a Skype thing, but with multi-channel somehow recording before you and I grow to the point where we need this mixer. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever had that thought, but
I wish somebody could have done something.
Yeah. I mean, there's still something about having knobs and dials that I don't know what to do with, but that it just feels more professional having it there. And so if nothing else, it's an expensive little ego boost to podcasting from your basement. Mics. What does Mike use for a mic these days?
Mike is currently using a Heil PR40.
Ah, yeah.
If I was going to future-proof myself, what is considered to be the best microphone for podcasting was surely the only one that I could do. I'm not using it 100% correctly. It just goes straight into the mixer. I am told that I should have some sort of preamp on it, so I have fed it the maximum amount of gain pretty much possible to get a decent sounding audio out of it. And I've made some little tweaks on the mixer side, but one day I'm going to buy more equipment to make my voice sound even better. But I'm very happy with the quality that this mic gives me.
Yeah, it sounds like we're very similar in that regard. That's the mic I'm using, and also I have the little penny fund, I guess actually Canada just got rid of their pennies, but nickel fund now for saving for some sort of preamp as well. But yeah, it's even with that limitation, I think I would, if this is the thing you want to do, I think I would recommend saving for I think it was around 300 and some bucks for the mic, but
yeah.
It is that good of a mic, I think, as long as your voice is suited for it too. And that's something I know a lot of us don't have the ability to do, is go out and test a bunch of mics. But if you can find a local music shop that has a few mics in stock that they'll let you borrow for a week or whatever, or rent, it's also worth checking out. But yeah, not that it's about looks at all, because nobody sees you ever doing it, but it certainly feels more professional.
Oh, it feels great. I've got this big arm here, and I've got pop guards and shock mount, and it makes me feel like I'm moving the arm around now, and I feel like a professional.
Exactly. And that's there's nothing really wrong with that. It is what it is, and it helps you if a good chair helps you feel like you're a professional radio guy or podcast guy, or you need to, yeah, sometimes we need those little boosts to help us just feel that much more professional. So what are some of the other hosts and or guests that you have on mics that they would use, that folks who are maybe just starting out you'd recommend?
I still recommend as a very good starting mic to be the Blue Yeti, just because of its cost. And I think for its cost, it's good. But my recommendation for people now is the Rode Podcaster.
Yeah.
I've never owned one myself, but a bunch of my colleagues do. And the audio quality that comes out of that microphone is excellent. It is more expensive. I mean, basically the Yeti you can use as it comes for however much it is. It can be, I've seen it, you know, it can be around about 100 and something bucks, really. Mm. But the Rode starts at like 220, and you need to buy a stand for it, you know?
Yeah.
You need to buy a shock mount for it. It's always great to have a shock mount, but like the Yeti comes with a built-in stand and it has a bunch of really cool presets. It's the most versatile of any USB mic that I've come across. But if you're looking for sound quality, which you always should be, I would suggest trying to just get the extra cash together and going for a Rode. But, you know, understand that you've got a bit more investment going in on that.
Yeah.
That you can get a sort of a kit where they'll give you the Rode arm, which I have. I had the Rode arm. which is like a mic arm. You know, you've seen those in professional looking sort of radio studios and stuff. And then they will give you a shock mount, which you'll have to have because it stops any sort of crazy noises happening if you bump the table. And it also keeps the mic in place. And the microphone, you can get them on Amazon as like a set for like $350, which is a pretty decent deal. I know a couple of people that have got that package and have been very happy with it.
Yeah, that's the same mic. Actually, again, going back to episode one of the show, Dave Rupert recommended he's using as well. He is. So, yeah, that's two votes for that one.
Get you a long way. Like the Rode podcast yeah. will get you a long way. You'll be very happy with it if you use it.
And I think that's the point is that you don't want to, like, if you're just starting out, just use a mic and try out recording yourself and getting used to the talking into the computer and maybe having a guest on and those kinds of things. You don't need to jump to a Rode podcaster or Heil PR40 right away. But once you've established that this is, okay, this is fun, I enjoy this, I want to do this now and actually take it up a notch and put a little bit of money into this, then yeah, I think skip over that initial, that first $100 phase of mics that you'd see and headsets and things and jump to something like the Rode podcaster and you'll be much happier. Plus, I think my justification, hopefully, for some of this, at least to my wife, is if it all goes awry and I really hate this in a year, the gear, hardware gear, doesn't, in audio, doesn't really replace itself that quickly. So like a Heil PR40 is still going to be worth a lot of money as long as Heil doesn't drop their prices, I guess, which I haven't, they've been the same price for I don't know how many years that I've been watching them and drooling over them. And same thing with mixers. Like, I mean, they'll be, you know, slightly more inexpensive mixers come along. But I know since I bought this one a couple of years ago, it's basically been the same price, same model. So things don't change that much. You can always dump it on eBay to some other aspiring podcaster if you decide it's not for you. So I know we got to run here shortly. I'm just thinking... I know you'd mentioned Squarespace you're using for managing your site.
Yep.
And that is something I think, I know they just, I saw in their release notes, I've used Squarespace a bit for a few different sites and in the release notes, they mentioned better support for iTunes and things like that. Your experience obviously is good enough that it's working really well for you in terms of posting and hosting the show and then also feeding it into iTunes. That's the primary way of sort of reaching out or getting a show out there to folks is through iTunes. So any comments on using Squarespace? I know they're also a sponsor, but you're they won't listen to this show.
I don't use them to host shows.
Right. Oh, yeah. I should make that distinction. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know a bunch of people that do now, especially since Squarespace 6, they've made it even easier to do it. This is not an ad. That's an actual fact. But of the people that I know that do it, they like it. I mean, you don't get sort of really fine grained statistics. But if you just want to get a podcast out in the world, that it works and it works pretty well. For hosting, this is something that we are going to look at this year. It's one of my primary things. It's one of the big things for me is to try and get our CMS. Operations to be better because currently we use dedicated podcast hosts who host the files for us. And in some cases we use their system to generate sort of the show notes and the feed. And in others we use Squarespace to do that. And that's just legacy and learning more and trying new things. But we use two hosts. I'm not going to recommend one of them because I wouldn't recommend them.
Fair enough.
And the host that I am most happy with is called Libsyn, and they have been around forever. Liberated Syndication, LIBSYN.com. Their statistics are fantastic. They're not cheap. They're not break the bank expensive. But if you want to do a podcast, you don't want to host it yourself, and you want statistics that you can quite literally rely on, I would go with them.
Yeah.
And I don't personally buy into PodTrack as a... you're aware of PodTrack.
Yeah.
I just don't like, there's something about it that I don't like. PodTrack, they don't host, but you sort of, they build a feed for you and then they track your statistics. I'm not really up for that. I've never really seen much in that. And I've heard very mixed things about them, in all honesty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excuse me. I use Libsyn. And that's again one of those things too that I think you when you're first starting out, you know, don't jump into some sort of hosting plan right away. Get settled on doing the pod. Like again, another theme from episode one of the show is do 10 episodes and then start setting some of these things in motion. But even their classic 50, which is $5 a month, I think is the starting point, which you don't get stats for that, but you can add stats for $2 a month on top of that. And they're one thing I'll say with them is that it's really easy to go up and down in their plans as you grow or don't grow, as the case may be. Because I know initially I think I was like, oh, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to have all these shows every month, and then it was like, okay, actually I'm not really using that much yet. Let's scale it back a bit for now, save some cash, and then I can grow again when and change plans. And so right from within their dashboard, I guess is what I'm saying, is it's really easy to adjust your plans. You're not emailing them and waiting for support and adjusting PayPal amounts and all that kind of stuff. They work really well. And like you said, they've been around for a long time, and that's all they do is podcasting more or less. And so yeah, they know their stuff, and yeah.
Really?
The last thing, I think, I'm just going through my notes here. I think the sort of covered most of what I was hoping to cover with what you do. And any special workflow stuff that you'd recommend? I know that's a big theme of some of your shows, and particularly Enough, but workflow as far as just you're recording a show and or scheduling any particular aspect of producing a podcast, I guess, stepping back from the gear itself, but the software that you're using for maybe taking notes or things like that, that you little tricks you found along the way.
In all honesty, I don't really think I've got. I have a terrible system. It's just so bad. Like there isn't anything about the way that I record a podcast that I would suggest to somebody else. Like I have a very inefficient way of recording. I have a very inefficient way of taking show notes, and that's again, the theme for 70 Decibels of 2013 is for us to become more efficient in the way that we do things. And this mainly stems from me just looking into other stuff. But if I was going to give a tip, right, because I guess what you're looking for is a tip of some kind.
Sure, yeah.
Preparation, man. That is what it is all about. If you don't, so you've got a couple of things. If you've got a guest, you've got to know the guest. If you're going to ask the guest questions, you have to know them. Like you have to be able to come up with questions that are tailored to those things. Like I've been on interviews, I've heard interviews. But if I'm on an interview and they ask me a question, which is a very obvious thing about me, you know, about me or my work, I just know that they've not done the work, you know, that they've not researched me. And of course, you don't have to know everything about me naturally. But the more you know, the better your interview is going to be. It's going to flow better. People are going to know that. I mean, you know, you're going to get people that are potentially listening to the show for the first time and stuff like that because they want to hear your guest or whatever. But also, even if you're not interviewing, if you are not prepared, if you don't have an outline when you're going into your show, if you haven't at least got some notes, these are the things that I want to talk about. It really shows. And for me, no amount of good editing can hide that.
Yeah.
That is my tip.
All right. Which is, I feel a bit, I came clean at the beginning of the show, but I think it's an ironic tip in terms of me interviewing you, which luckily I do have listened to you a lot. I follow you on Twitter, et cetera. And so I'm aware of what you do, but I had mixed up the time zones and the hour that I was going to be spending putting my research notes together for this podcast is actually now when we've been recording. And so I'm not as prepared as I do normally like to be. And so, but I completely agree with you because I know I've done shows in the past with some folks where I think there's a whole art, and that's maybe a discussion for another podcast of another episode of choosing a guest or choosing someone you're going to interview. Because as much as it, you know, I might want to say, I want to go interview Leo Laporte, but if I'm going to be either like gaga and not be able to communicate properly with him, it's going to be a terrible interview and he's not going to ever want to speak to me again. Or there's other people where you think that they're successful and so then I want to talk to them. But when you actually talk to them, you don't really have that much in common and it doesn't make for a good interview that way. And so,
yeah, that's interesting because it's all about building. I mean, you've got to build the skill to be able to interview someone. Like, you know, I'm not gonna name names, but when I started with Command Space hinges extremely heavily on the guest. Mm-hmm. It's an interview show. It's a talk show in that regard. When I started it, I was only inviting people onto the show that I knew their work extremely well.
Right.
And then as time has gone on, you naturally run out of those people.
Yeah.
So I have been testing myself with some people recently whose work I am not that familiar with, but I know who they are. I mean, I'm not going to sort of talk to some Joe random, but you know, I know this person, I know what they do, and then I've researched them. And I feel like those episodes have also come out really well. So what I have established is that I have honed my craft in interviewing. And I feel like I'm at a point now where I can interview practically anyone if necessary, as long as I understand who they are and what they do. But the nerves thing is just a thing that goes away. Like let me rephrase that. The nerves don't go away, but your ability to deal with them increases. Like I have, you know, I still talk to people that before we go on the air, I am like short of breath. It's just a mess because these people affected for years and years, or I just see them as such an important person to talk to that my nerves are just incredible. Like I spoke to John Roderick a couple of weeks ago. Mm. The thing is with him is he's a rock star.
Yeah, totally.
He is not a blogger.
Yeah.
The man is a quite literal rock star. So it was totally different for me. And I was just, you know, I was really nervous about it. But I feel the show came out really well. And it's just because, the idea when the light goes on, I put my game face on and just get through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right out of preparation is what makes that happen.
Totally. And that's, I was going to actually comment on that episode because that's, I think, maybe I've listened to one since then, but in my queue anyways, but I think that was the last episode of one of your shows that I listened to. And yeah, I was actually curious how you're going to handle it because he's a personality. He's, you know, big, boisterous. He has his things he wants to say or at least he'll happily talk for a while. And so it's kind of a bit of, you know, feeding him the right platform to then go off on. But at the same time, you just still have to have a conversation that's worth listening to. And I think, yeah, you did a great job with him. And with, I know probably I would guess you'd put someone like Merlin Mann in that similar category. Not that he's a rock star, but
he maybe, is a star.
Yeah,
though.
Maybe amongst nerds, he's a and yeah.
Yeah, I want to talk to Merlin again because I was so nervous. It was the first episode of the new show, and I didn't really know.
Oh, right.
Gonna be, yeah.
Yeah,
and,
I forgot that he was number one.
Yeah, he was number one, and
yeah.
It wasn't just me and him.
Right.
And I think it went well. I mean, I was very pleased with how it turned out. But I would like another crack at it. Gonna arrange that.
Yeah.
Just I feel like I'm even, you know, I'm more prepared now. And the thing with the Roderick episode is I have had more feedback about a single episode than I've ever had of any other show. I mean, people loved it, and in a way, that's kind of maddening. Because I don't think I did anything different. You know,
right.
That's the thing, right? I speak to friends. I've spoken to friends and colleagues about this, like Matt Alexander and people like that. He's saying that it's what we were talking about was different to the usual sort of discussion, and that was why people enjoyed it. But it's difficult for me to get rock stars on the show.
Yeah, I understand totally, and that's one of the pitfalls I think of. I mean, it's a good pitfall to have, but having an interview show is, and that's what I'm up against with this too, is, you know, what we talked about earlier, you run out of guests eventually that you're comfortable or familiar with or that you look up to even. And, but then also you're at the mercy of each individual guest bringing their own audience with them or not, as the case may be. Mm-hmm. And that your success or failure, going back to downloads and numbers and stuff, can be hinged on whether this person, maybe they don't. You know, maybe John, I know he did, but, you know, maybe he decides not to tell anybody about the interview for whatever reason. He forgets to tweet it or, you know.
Yep, which has really happened with us on episodes that I thought were going to be a real success.
Mm-hmm.
And the person hasn't got a platform that they're willing to share it on. I'm trying to think of one. I feel like I've got one on the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember what. Tom Merritt. is a great example because Tom has a great audience of people and he tweeted the show, but it's typically the links that people give you. But he doesn't have a blog.
Right.
And I knew that going in, so it's not the perfect example. See, I knew that he had nothing to really link to me to. He has a site and he linked to it on his site, but it's not, you know, that's not where you go.
Yeah. You go to Twitter or to go to people are watching the show to hear about him or keep up with him. Yeah, exactly.
And it's not a problem, but when you have an interview or a guest show, it's part of the territory is that you build your listenership by having new people come, and if they like what they hear, they stick around. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that can be a problem.
Yeah. And you're, the good and the bad, because you took, like I'm doing, I'm reaching out to you. You have a bigger audience, and assuming that you approve of the the content that we've discussed,
this message
exactly because it is, and that's I'll let you go here because I know both of us are running out of time and it happens to be Valentine's Day and all that kind of stuff. But I'll have to have you back another time because I think that's where this show seems to be going more as I interview podcasters is we each of us. I mean, it's fun to talk about gear and it's fun to talk about workflows and there'll be an element of that, I think, in this show. But the sort of philosophy of podcasting almost is sort of where this show seems to be headed more as each guest comes along because it's something we don't really get to do because you're often just talking with other people, not about podcasting, obviously. And there you don't want it to be do too much navel gazing in our own industry or whatever. But it's good to have conversations.
I love talking about podcasting. I love talking about the business side of it and the ideas behind it and what makes it a successful medium. It's one of my favorite things in the entire world to talk about.
Well, you had, did you not have a show that you had started? Maybe this was just when you first launched.
Yeah, yeah. I had a show. It was called The Hurley Bird.
Right.
And
not to call you out on, podcaster has shows that sit dormant, so that's not a
the reason that it's dormant is because I don't like one-man shows. I don't like being the only person.
Right. Yeah.
That might have changed for me now. I mean, I haven't recorded an episode of that in like 2 years, so I would like to maybe try and go back to it one day. But then I also realized that I was giving people pseudo advice as I hadn't at the same point that I hadn't really worked anything out. I have like 12,000 words of a book that I started.
Oh, nice.
Which will never be finished. Same idea is that I started an introduction to podcasting book,
right?
But then at the same time realized that I do some things so badly that I'm actually not always the right person to advise someone.
Well, it's like I just watched what was this Merlin? He was in an OmniFocus 2 video or whatever, and he's he fully admits that he's terrible getting things done sometimes. The review process of getting things done anyways, but you don't always have to be sometimes it helps to be down in the trenches and throwing out advice that you aren't necessarily at yourself yet even. But no, that's good. Maybe I'll definitely have to have you back at some point here show develops and continue a conversation about podcasting. What speaking of this, I forgot to maybe warn you, I guess, but I'm sure you've got a few on the tip of your tongue that you could point to. What are some podcasts that you're listening to right now, shows that you like? And maybe if there's any that are a little bit out of the ordinary that you think maybe deserve a little recognition that don't or don't get it yet or just...
Let me have a quick... I'm just opening Instacast. I have hundreds of subscriptions. It's actually ridiculous. It's telling me there's a new one. Let me see. I'm just scanning down now. I mean, obviously I listen to the main 5x5 stuff as most people do. I don't know what my favorite podcast is anymore because they've all been ending.
Right.
100 Down with Pat Dryburgh. That's a little out of left field at the moment. Pat Dryburgh, he's a great guy, a very funny guy. He's trying to lose 100 pounds. So that's at 100down.net. That's a good show. I'm enjoying Neutral, even though I'm not a massive car guy, which is my...
I haven't listened to that one yet.
Broderick on the Line is probably my favorite show, naturally. Pretty Broken, that's a fun show. That's a bit out of left field. Greg Turner and Kevin Leap. They're talking about what's wrong with the South of America. But they're basically just talking about Southern America. There's a show called Command Space, which is pretty good.
Do you listen to your own shows?
No, I don't. Never.
I didn't, and that's not. I'm not poking fun. I just, it's an interesting one. I've my wife has bugged me often because I'll come home and she'll be listening to one of my shows, and because I do one with my brother-in-law, and so it's kind of just us talking crap or whatever. But and so I'll come home and it'll be listening, and I'll make her turn it off because I can't stand to listen to it. But she'll bug me and say, you know, you need to listen to it at least occasionally to hear what you're doing wrong or right or whatever. But
I did at the very start.
Yeah, that's what that's me too.
And if I think something's gone particularly well, I might listen to a few bits of it. But I have so many other shows to listen to. I haven't got a time for my own.
Exactly.
See, let me find one more for you here before we wrap up. I guess Unprofessional, but I think that's quite a popular show. That's on Mule. I enjoy Unprofessional actually quite a lot because it's different. Mm-hmm. It's very different. They don't talk about technology. It's a lot of people behind the people, you know, wives and et cetera, and partners and designers. And they, you know, they just talk about what makes them tick, which is an idea that me and another host had. So it's cool that show exists. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I sort of cherry picked episodes of that one too.
It's worth listening to the whole thing. I know why you do that because you're like, I don't know who this person is. But
right.
On the episodes where I don't know them, I've always enjoyed it because they're talking about just other human things.
Right.
Good show.
All right. Well, I think on that note, where can folks, obviously we've referenced 70decibels.com a lot, but where else can folks find you and follow you and stalk you? And
I'm on all of the social networks that you would care to find a human being on.
GeoCities?
Yeah, GeoCities, MySpace, all of them. iMike, iMYKE is my username on them. If you can find me there, then that's where to follow me.
All right. My thanks to Mike Hurley for joining me on Show Me Your Mic. You can find all the links and other things we discussed on the show at sskTN.com. Look for the Show Me Your Mic logo and episode 2. You can find other podcasts that I do at sskTN.com as well if you're interested. Some interview shows, some discussion shows, building a business online, and parenting podcast, a couple other things like that. So visit sskTN.com for that. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm iChris on Twitter. SSKTN's account is just at SSKTN and facebook.com/SSKTN. I think that's it. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.